Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a podcast by Triad Behavioral Health, where we cover trending topics in behavioral and mental health. This podcast is designed to share unique and relevant topics occurring within the world, our communities, and bring them a mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor, and today I'm joined by Dr. John Reckert. Dr. Reckert is a senior healthcare executive at Cerner and was a client prior to this position that he currently holds. John was a business owner and was a chief of quality management coordinating electronic records with a statewide mental health program through the state of California's Department of Corrections, acute mental health care, and the law enforcement industry. Today we get a chance to talk with John about his work with Cerner and the digital environment and mental health. John, really nice to have you here. Welcome to our show.
Thank you, Graham. I'm really happy to be here.
Nice to have you. You know, data management and collection of information is such a helpful process in informing and shaping our understanding of mental health issues, as well as helping us frame and organize our treatment approaches. With the use of data and technology now, we can make significant contributions in preparing for and responding to mental health issues where care and support are needed. I'd love to have a little bit of background about what was your journey that got you involved in this mental health advocacy?
Yeah, sure. It seemed kind of like I backed into it because I started out wanting to be in private practice and ended up in corrections. And it turned out to be a really interesting and exciting environment. And as you may or may not know, corrections in California is a somewhat litigated environment. And one of the lawsuits specifically addresses mental health provision of services. So there's a lot of interaction with court monitors and presenting data. And so I got to do that early on when I took on one of my first supervisor jobs there. And it was really interesting me to look at the data and not just, and this was maybe 15 years ago. So the ability to get data was pretty limited. And it was a lot of pouring through charts and making hash marks, and it was very old school. But it was very interesting once I could put it into an Excel spreadsheet. And I found that I could really change some of the discussion with the court monitors. And so they may come in and see an edge case where something happened and they assume it happens everywhere. And so we were able to look at data and then really see if there's any indication that it's a more widespread problem or whether or not that was a limited individual case that needed looking into itself. You know, and I never really looked at myself as a data scientist at that point or even somebody that was, I think, good with math. But the more I did it, the more I found I was really fascinated by being able to tell a story with data. And more importantly, that it actually had an impact on how my institution was seen from the perspective of the court. My next opportunity was to actually be involved with design and build of a prison hospital that was focused around medical provision of care. And I was able to really push for improvement in mental health conditions of confinement, which, if you've ever been in a prison, can be pretty challenging for individual patients. When Cerner came to town, we were going to deploy an electronic medical record. I volunteered to be on our committee part of it. To be honest, mental health, at least in organizations, rarely had a seat at the table. And I hadn't realized how lucky I was to actually be sitting at that table and able to change things and make recommendations. We were really able to kind of make use of Cerner's functionality in ways that, honestly, at that time, I'm not sure Cerner had. It really made me appreciate what the functionality could do. And what I found is that behavioral health just lacked somebody pushing to utilize that and configure their solutions. I just happened to be in the right place at the right time. So now I'm on the inside, and I hope to push it even further from that perspective as well.
That is a cool journey. It's kind of nice how it just kind of organically flowed from one to the other. And you talked about some things that I want to come back to in just a moment. The idea of being able to create the discussions, to be able to tell the story, almost like, you know, data literacy is oftentimes how we refer to that. I want to hold that just for a second. I want to come back to two things. One, just kind of in a nutshell, what is some of the mental health content that you find yourselves collecting and using to shape, again, either policies or treatment options? And then I want to come back to the customer responsiveness of Cerner as a company. But what's the data you guys are collecting for mental health typically?
You know, a really big part of what made it difficult to work as a clinician at the California Department of Corrections is that when the administrations would change, then the direction would change. And a lot of times they didn't remove the old direction. And so it just layered on and it became this sort of labyrinthine collection of mandates that had to be followed. And so what was sort of nice about having data would be to respond to new requests and show that we could really focus our efforts and not only just find a problem, but really look deeper and deeper because you had a lot more data elements than you had before. And you could really zero in on what was really the problem. So for example, we had a change control process that would take requests and complaints and tickets and evaluate what the problem was and what we needed to do about it. And for example, one of the institutions was saying, we need to make a requirement because we have a referral for an inpatient care, somebody suicidal. And the policy says you have to make the order and you have to have a form that gives you information about what's happening with that patient and why he was referred. This one institution, which was very big, was saying, well, we're only getting 40% of the required documentation. Naturally, our old method would have been, well, let's make it required. Let's add some more training, monitor the training, and then we'll again look. So it was going to require a lot of build, a lot of policy change, and a lot of oversight as well. And instead, we looked at what was the actual incidence statewide. And it turns out the compliance was actually up in the high 90s.
Wow.
So instead of looking and doing something broad and overly general, we started looking at that institution. And then we looked at the referrals. And sure enough, they were only getting it 40% of the time. Then we were able to look at which ones from where. So we were able to identify two institutions that were deficient in submitting those documentation. So the easier answer was for me to call the chiefs and of those two institutions and talk about their compliance, right? It also turned out to be two institutions that we hadn't rolled out a program that did this emergency intervention. And that little group of people that did those emergency interventions, their actual compliance was like 99%. So anywhere that they were, they didn't have that problem. And so, yes, let's roll that out at those two institutions. So that's sort of an example of how we use data to really not waste taxpayer dollars, really become more effective, really make sure that that patient is not falling through the cracks. And so the clinicians at the receiving institution can make the smartest decision with having the best data they could.
John, in addition to the Department of Corrections and some really meaningful work that took place there, we also know that in this digital environment now, we hear what you're describing as ways to create the discussion or to tell a story, oftentimes referred to as data literacy. And that's just simply referring to the ability to derive meaningful information from data. But it involves a number of steps, and I want to appreciate these steps because a lot goes into it. For example, knowing what data is appropriate to look at, having to be trained in the tools and the analytic methods and how to use them, knowing how to critically think about the information, what's being yielded so that analysis can be made. Even looking at what data is being misleading or misrepresented, and then the ever-challenging skill of the storytelling that you talked about that creates a meaningful and an interesting and useful way where the data can be told. So it's my understanding, I kind of want to shift a little bit to Cerner right now. I was looking at some of the things you guys are doing in response to COVID right now. You guys are doing things in telemental health, helping clients increase their telehealth capacity and their functionality, sharing best practices. You're even helping hospitals implement technology. Take us down the Cerner path just for a few minutes here and help us understand where some of your energy is and what's getting you excited there.
I love talking about that. I was also very lucky enough to be, after I volunteered, to be a part of their COVID response council. And it's really amazing the work they're doing. And they have come up with and developed a lot of content and tracking software, and they have provided that to our clients for free. To talk about telehealth, Rogers Behavioral Health, a client, in 2 weeks converted their entire outpatient and day treatment to telehealth. And so they were trying to reduce exposure. I was talking to one of their clinicians, and he was telling me that he had talked to people in similar organizations, and they did not know how to pivot. We've been trying to document, you know, the best practices we can. You know, there's all types of data and some of it is information, right? And we've partnered with PsychHub, which is a company, but they formed a consortium of the top mental health leaders in the world, APA, you name it. And we were lucky enough to be on that page as well. And there's a lot of free resources from how to deal with any kind of mental health symptoms you might be experiencing. It's a very anxiety-provoking time. There's a lot of uncertainty. They have some free videos. They also offer videos on how to convert and some basics of telehealth. So I really like that there's a lot of good information that's really trying to help clinicians. So that's another type of data, right? Cerner actually has a lot of tracking software, which I find is very interesting about county to county, and they can help predict surge and use of beds in space. And Cerner also has the ability to expand the beds easily. So as they need to create these hospitals in Europe, Nightingale Hospital, they created a 4,000 bed conference center in 2 weeks. Wow. Yeah. So they were able to do that very fast. I like Cerner's response to this. It makes me proud to be an associate with them.
This is a great foundational understanding of just data analysis, what it can do, how it can shape understanding, change lives. What I really love is where it's growing.
And where this is going is going to blow your socks off.
What's interesting about Cerner is we're moving our commercial clients to the cloud, which will then facilitate more of the advanced analytics that behavioral health really needs.
Part of the problems with predictive analytics in behavioral health, it's hard to predict human behavior, but I suspect some of it isn't. Polls tend to work, right? I just think we don't have enough data. And, you know, we were using demographic data for suicide prediction. CDCR did predictive analytics for suicide, and it's actually had one of the better predictor values that I've seen, which is 10%, which is pretty bad, right? You're not going to put a lot of money on that if you had a predictive analytics that picked stocks for you and only got it 10% of the time, right? But it's better than most. And what was interesting is it was really from paper chart extraction, and it was the demographics that they had available. And other people were combing charts, but what I think will be available is the ability to go through these huge data sets now that are available and start looking for patterns that the computer can find. And so I think there's a lot, you know, not to mention, I think there's a ton of stuff that people can do with descriptive analytics all by itself. I think there's a ton of stuff that's coming, and we just have to be there with it.
I was going to say, congratulations. You're enjoying your life here, aren't you?
Yeah, it's a really good job. I think there's just so few people standing up, and I think we need more people to really advocate in this space, because I'm not sure it's a well-traveled path for a lot of mental health people as analytics. Most of my early training was about how to read research. So it was really focused narrowly along that path. And I think you're right. How do you look at data right now? Behavioral health is a big part of some organizations, and how do they advocate for themselves to get their data, what goes in, how it's treated, what it's done, how you report on it, and then how you message it. And I think that's another gap that we should start addressing, is data literacy for behavioral health, because I had to learn a lot of it on the fly, and there wasn't much out there.
I think that's going to be critical. You know, particularly as we continue to deal with the fallout and sequelae of COVID, I know that our medical colleagues are doing a phenomenal job of, you know, coming in and trying to keep the numbers low and the curves low, and all the things they're doing are pretty noteworthy. But I firmly believe there's going to be the mental health practitioners and all the branches of mental health that are going to be putting this nation back together for quite a while, relationally, emotionally, having continuity of care through these online services that keep people safe, but also allow people access to care. And I know that this data that you're describing can really help inform best practices approach, not just for the various issues that are going on, but ways to connect with patients, I think, in very meaningful ways. I'm noticing that we're kind of winding down on our time, but John, it's been great to be with you, man. It's a great story, and what a cool start to the place you're at right now, in a time where more than ever, we need access to mental health care, helping us understand really just how data and technology gets to make this really significant contribution to mental health issues as well, and for that care and support that are needed even more so right now in a variety of levels. So sure appreciate you being here with us today. Thank you.
Well, thank you. It's my pleasure.
Really nice. And for those of you listening, thanks so much for being a part of our podcast. We look forward to having you join us next time on Behavioral Health Today.
Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Behavioral Health Network, all rights reserved.